You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, where we uplift caregivers through education and support while also lifting up their invaluable role in society. And I am Liza, and our co-host Kristen will be joining us shortly, and together we are the Empowered Caregivers. With Veterans Day just around the corner, we wanted to focus this show on veterans, their caregivers, and the wonderful organizations out there that support them. Today, we will talk with Larry Jackson from the Ben Jackson Foundation, Adam Weiss from Project Home, and Lonnie Rethaber from Patriot Canines of Wisconsin. There are around 19 million veterans as of this year, according to data from the Department of Veteran Affairs, which is a little under 10% of the total U.S. population. One of the largest impacts on veterans returning home is PTSD. PTSD varies by era, but it is estimated that it impacts between 11 and 20% of all veterans, according to the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs. In 2020, 4.7 million veterans had a service-connected disability, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. That is a huge population of people impacted. Not only do a large portion of veterans themselves come home with physical and emotional needs, but their families and loved ones that work tirelessly every day to be there for them the best that they can are also impacted. We have so much to talk about today, so let's just jump right in. First, we're going to talk with Larry Jackson, the founder of the Ben Jackson Foundation. Larry, I was going to read a bit about your organization from your website, but you have such a remarkable story, I think it would be best told by you. Can you tell listeners who you are, why you founded the Ben Jackson Foundation, and what the mission of the Ben Jackson Foundation is?
Sure thing. Thanks, Liza. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for the invitation. So my name is Larry Jackson. As you mentioned, I'm the founder and president of the Ben Jackson Foundation. Our mission is simply about reuniting military families. So we focus on young active duty enlisted military personnel who are serving their country, whether it's somewhere over in the next state or halfway around the world. So think about the high school graduate who turns 18, graduates from high school, enlists in the military. They go do, let's say, 6 months of training. And then they get stationed halfway around the world, let's say somewhere in Japan or Guam. They're on completely the other side of the world. They're far away, maybe for the first time in their life, their support structure. And their time zone is such that, you know, when it's day, it's night there and vice versa. A lot of times they can feel incredibly isolated. And many times they need to reconnect with their families, and that's best done in person. Unfortunately, a lot of people in that situation don't have the financial resources yet that early in their career to be able to afford a ticket home. That ticket can actually be most of what somebody might make in an entire month. Wow. Just to get home. So, you know, in terms of why we founded the Ben Jackson Foundation, you know, I was that military family member. My son graduated high school in 2016. He enlisted in the Air Force. About, you know, a year later, he found himself in Japan. It was a 14-hour time difference. So, you know, by the time I would get done with work, it's already 9 o'clock there, or, you know, 10 o'clock. So I maybe have a little bit of time to talk to him. In practice, we were really only able to talk. Usually Saturday mornings was about the best time. So anyway, he was having a bit of a tough time adjusting at first. And he was really interested in coming home for a trip, but he said, "Hey, I can't really afford that ticket. Can you help me out?" So I traveled a lot for work, was able to get him a ticket from Northern Japan through Tokyo to Detroit to Madison with my airline miles. So he came home, he surprised everybody. I was the only one that knew he was coming home. My wife didn't know, my other kids didn't know, literally no one knew. So I got him home. We surprised everybody. He got to see, you know, family, friends, really a tremendous amount of people. And after that great week, he went back to Japan. And about 6 weeks after that, we were told by some Air Force officers at our door that he had died in an accident on base. So we were just as a family so heartbroken, yet at the same time so grateful that we had that opportunity to see him. And I don't know what that would have been like if we hadn't had that opportunity. So anyway, we didn't really know what to do. We had a lot of people reaching out to us and donating money. We didn't know what we were going to do with it. My youngest son said, you know, Ben got to come home. Why don't we do something to help other people like him come home? And we thought that was a great idea. So that's really what we did. 4 years ago, we created the Ben Jackson Foundation in Ben's honor. And we raised money to help young people, first-term military members, stationed anywhere around the world to afford that flight home and be reunited with their families.
I'm so sorry for your loss, Larry, and so appreciative of what you've done with your story and you know how you took your situation and made good out of it, right? And all of the people that you've helped along the way. I'm just curious, who is eligible for a ticket home and how do they apply?
Sure. So the eligibility requirements are fairly straightforward. You have to be enlisted in a branch of the military. So that would include all now six branches. On your first enlistment, you have to have arrived at your first duty station. So it can't be, you know, a trip home right after basic training. You need to get to where you're stationed. So basically enlisted less than 4 years at your first duty station. That's really the only requirements for eligibility. Sometimes we've actually had cases where people have been in the military, if you can believe it, upwards of 6 to 8 years, and they've never been home once.
Wow.
So in that case, we have extended that 4 year window in the case where someone just hasn't been able to get home for whatever reason to make them eligible. It doesn't mean we'll be able to help them necessarily, but they are eligible in those situations.
Sure. I was reading through your website, it sounds like there's a lot of flexibility there. You know, it's really making sure that the right people get home. Well, not that there's not a right person to get home, right? Everybody deserves to come home and see their family. But I think that's great that you're really open to people's situations and stories and allow for that flexibility.
That's really the kind of the really difficult part about this is, like you said, everybody deserves it. So when we get 250 applications in a month and with our current level of funding, we can say yes to 10 to 12 of them a month. Mm-hmm. It makes it really difficult to make those decisions, right? To figure out who's gonna get help and who isn't.
Yeah.
We want to say yes to everyone.
Of course. And are these people throughout the country or is this Wisconsin based?
So we actually started out Wisconsin based. We wanted to make it similar to a high school scholarship. You know, someone going into the military, they have this kind of in their back pocket when they want to come home, and then once they get to a point where they can use it, we would help them out. What we actually found was it was surprisingly difficult to find people going into the military and have them apply. So for a while, really for the first 2.5 years of our existence, we said yes to everyone because we had a lot of generous donors and we had the funding to say yes to everybody. A year and a half ago, after right around Memorial Day of last year, that completely flipped because we were having so much trouble trying to, you know, find people that we could help with the money that had been donated. We sent a couple of emails to some Air Force bases that we had personal connections to. That email got forwarded and re-forwarded around the world. And the last 3 weeks in May last year, we got 100 applications every single day.
Oh, wow.
So that's when it first really kind of blew up. we always knew that that need was out there, and that people were in a situation where they could use a mental break and be able to come home and recharge with their families. We just didn't always have the applications to prove it. And now we get, on average, I'll say about 250 applications every single month. And, you know, like I said, we have to narrow that down to 10 to 12 people to say yes to. So to answer your question, it was just Wisconsin. Now anybody in any branch of the military, whether you're a resident of Wisconsin, any other state, or any other country for that matter, if you're not a U.S. citizen, or you're from a different country and you're serving in the U.S. military, we've helped several people go from the United States back home to their home country, let's say Philippines, Guam, and several others. So yeah, it's really anybody, anywhere serving in the U.S. military.
That's wonderful. And I have a few more questions that I want to ask you. And I know that we're going to be coming up on a break here shortly. So let's just share your website and how people can donate. And, you know, I'm sure individuals have taken it upon themselves to do fundraisers. You know, what are some ways that people can support your organization?
So I'd say there's two ways. One, you can go to our website, benjacksonfoundation.org. You can donate there. You can also become a monthly donor there, even if it's something like $10 a month, you can sign up to donate. A lot of other people like to do Facebook fundraisers for their birthdays. So that's a good way to help us out as well. And I do want to mention that, you know, we're 3 weeks out. 3 weeks from tomorrow is Veterans Day. So every year we do a Veterans Day fundraiser called Home for the Holidays. Our goal is to raise $15,000 so we can get 20 people home. So that's the big push we're working on now. So if you're thinking about donating, you can really make a huge difference in the life of somebody and get them home for the holidays this year.
Yeah. And is the Home for the Holidays, is that an online event basically?
So we will be publishing a GoFundMe. If you publish, or if you go follow us on Facebook, we'll publish that link. But really anything we get from now until through the month of November, it goes towards that campaign.
Wonderful. I can't wait to talk to you more after this short break. Thank you, Larry.
Yep, thank you.
Listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and today we are speaking to several guests in preparation for Veterans Day that's just around the corner. We've been talking with Larry Jackson from the Ben Jackson Foundation, which is a nonprofit that raises money so that military personnel can come home and see their parents. So Larry, I just love the work that you're doing. And as a parent with a child overseas, you may not be considered a family caregiver per se, but that experience has to add a level of stress or take an emotional toll on you. Can you tell listeners that haven't had that lived experience what it's like to have a child in the military overseas and what the feelings are when you find out your child is coming back home?
Sure. So I like to tell people that, you know, we've been through a pandemic where we've been away from our family members and it's been hard to see them. We can't see them in person. They can't travel. Having family in the military, or even being in the military, it's like that all the time without a pandemic. Pandemic just made it harder and more stressful. So when you have that child in the military, you're always thinking about what they're doing, maybe what could go wrong. You definitely pay closer attention to world events, and think about them in a different way. It adds a level of stress, especially when you can't talk to them whenever you want to, and you don't know when you're going to see them again. It could be you never really know. Even if you think they think they're going to get to come home for Thanksgiving, let's say, you don't know that that's for sure going to happen, because there's a lot more things to consider. So it's definitely the time differences, the communication's harder. When you do find out that they're coming home, it's really all you can think about, right? You think about what you're going to do when they come home, who you're going to go see. You wonder, you know, how have they changed? You might not have even seen them for a year and a half, 2 years or more. And you just want to hear more about what they're doing day to day. And when they are home, it's actually interesting, because you wonder when they go out on their own, you wonder where they are, when they're going to be home. Meanwhile, for the last year, when they were around the world, you didn't really think about that. But, you know, just because that they're an adult now, they're in the military, you still worry about them.
Oh, I bet. And I know that you said that you give around an average of 10 tickets per month. And as we know, everyone deserves a ticket home. So it has to be incredibly hard, like you mentioned, to go through those applications. What is one of your most memorable stories of a ticket home recipient?
I had to think about this one because there's quite a few, actually. But the one that I think sticks with me is... it was actually from somebody from Wisconsin. When they're from Wisconsin, we do what we can to actually go meet them in person. So this person is in the Marine Corps serving in Okinawa. And we had given this award to him a year before, but he hadn't really had the opportunity to use it yet. So his plans were to come home for the holidays last year. Turns out that at one point he found out that his grandfather was not doing well and was going into hospice. So he came home early. He used the ticket home award that we gave him to help with his flight expenses. And when we got to meet him, he told us, you know, I wasn't planning to come home right now. And without this available to me, I wouldn't have been able to make it and say goodbye to my grandfather. So that was definitely, a pretty powerful thing to have somebody tell you that, you know, without something that we played a very small part in, this might not have happened.
Yeah. The story just gave me chills all the way down my spine. You've touched so many people's lives with your work, Larry, and I just want to thank you for the great work that you do. And can you let listeners know one more time where they can go to support your organization?
Sure. It's BenJacksonFoundation.org. Or you can find us on Facebook, a lot of people, or Instagram. A lot of people that get awards share those photos with us. So we try to post photos of them on our social media. They let us do that, which is great. Those are the best places. And like I said, just keep an eye out for updates on our Home for the Holidays campaign.
Definitely. And we'll be sure to mention it as the date gets a little bit closer. We are up on time, but I will say, when I was going through your website, I saw the different people involved, and it looks like a lot of family, like this is a big family organization for you guys, and everyone's involved. And I just really just want to thank you again for the amazing work that you do and your ability to touch so many lives. Thank you.
Well, yeah, I appreciate it, Liza. Thanks for letting us be on and tell our story and tell Ben's story.
Yeah, you bet. Take care.
All right, thanks.
Next, we're going to be talking with Adam Weiss with Project Home. Adam, we could do a whole show on Project Home and the amazing work that you guys do. But before we talk about your veterans program, since we're focusing on veterans today, which is serving those who have served, can you give us a brief overview of Project Home and what your mission is?
Sure, Liza. Thanks for having us on tonight. Project Home is an independent nonprofit that has been serving Dane County and Greene County for over 50 years, primarily in the low to moderate income communities. And we typically provide home repair, energy efficiency, and accessibility modification services to these households through things like our weatherization program, which is a statewide and federally funded program, through some county, city, and state home repair type programs. And then, of course, we have things like Serving Those Who Served, which is a community-based, grassroots, community-funded program that we started about 6 or 7 years ago, I believe.
Well, we didn't get too far until we had to go up into commercial, but I can't wait to hear more after this short break about Project Home and all the wonderful work that you're doing.
Great.
Listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. I'm Liza, and we got our co-host Kristen joining us via telephone in California, where she's doing some caregiving responsibilities of her own. So we've been talking with Adam Weiss from Project Home and the wonderful work that they do. And I was just about to ask before we had to go into commercial, can you tell us a little bit more about your veterans program, Serving Those Who Have Served, and what type of work that has been done and what type of work you can do to support veterans?
Sure. So Serving Those Who Serve, like I said earlier, has started as a local initiative, totally volunteer funded, not any kind of a government program. So it's all people who care and want to say thank you to veterans by donating and helping us perform needed home repairs on veterans' homes. So, I mean, the things we can do are pretty much anything that can make that home more durable, more safe for the veteran to live in, more comfortable, more energy efficient, anything like that. So, I mean, we can really talk to the veteran after they apply and try to meet their specific needs as much as we're able to. Some things that we've done in the past, you know, things like, you know, accessibility modifications in terms of widening doorways, wheelchair ramps into homes. So, you know, they can either get in, or in some cases they've been sort of home ridden and couldn't get out very easily. So, you know, installing a ramp or some other method for them to get out of their house a little easier so they can just get out and enjoy their yard. That's pretty life changing for some people. You know, if they don't have functional toilets, you know, that's definitely something that we could do for people. People who have mobility issues or are in a chair, you know, we've done things like bathtub to shower conversions or roll-in shower conversions. Grab bars are always a big one. Alarms in homes, carbon monoxide alarms, smoke detectors. And of course, things like the big ticket items like appliances that don't function that most of us take for granted, like a stove or a microwave or a refrigerator to keep your food safe and cold, you know, furnaces, water heaters. We also administer a lot of home repair programs in the state and for the state of Wisconsin and also for Dane County and Greene County just south of us down here. And if a veteran applies, we always kind of work with them to see what other sorts of sources we can bring to bear to really get them all the help that they need. So we try to be a one-stop shop for them. While they may apply for Serving Those Who Serve, we can also help them out with these other home repair or rehab programs too.
Oh, that's wonderful. And you know, I know we've done shows on veterans and caregiving in the past, and I have learned that sometimes it can be difficult for veterans to accept help. These are a group of people that took serving others to the ultimate level, as in they were willing to risk their own lives to serve and serve their country. So receiving services can be a challenging concept. If there are veterans out there that are listening or caregivers that support veterans, can you tell them why they should just go ahead and give you a call?
Yeah, like I said, I mean, this program is locally funded, and these are people that gave money that want to help. So, I mean, if you have an issue that's affecting your lifestyle, that is, you know, just, you know, creating a situation where you can't lead a normal life that we all take for granted, please reach out to us. You know, there's no judgment. There's, you know, we deal with people all the time in these sorts of situations. People want to help. And, you know, really, more often than not, if I'm being honest, it's not necessarily always the veterans that reach out to us. it's a caregiver, a family member that has concerns about them, because you're right, you know, there's this commitment to service and doing things for others that we tend to hold as veterans. And I guess, you know, it's hard just to ask for help. And you talked earlier about things like PTSD and service-connected disabilities that vets have to deal with. And obviously all those sort of spiral sometimes and create these situations where people feel helpless and they can't ask for help and they don't want to help, you know, receive services from others because they have too much pride. It's just one of these things where you've given to us, we want to come out and help you with your situation. It's confidential, it's private. We're not going to advertise that we're helping you. We don't need to put a sign in the front yard or anything like that. It's really just us having services that you can take advantage of, and we're happy to do it.
Oh, I bet. It's got to be an honor, right, to be able to help somebody that has done so much for us.
I wanted to say, this is Kristen here, and I'm glad to finally be a part of the conversation. I'm sorry I came late. But, Adam, I think it's really cool to hear how your organization is veterans helping veterans as well as other people. But it does seem to me like you're providing more than just these physical things, as well as just having eyes and ears, you know, in the home and in the veteran's life, and being able to see if there's other services they might need or be able to qualify for. And that level of just fraternity, right, brotherhood and sisterhood, is something that I think is amazing, and something that caregivers for veterans, if they feel like the person they're taking care of, their family member, isn't going to necessarily reach out, that hopefully they'll be able to encourage them in this way. And then once somebody from your organization gets there, it seems like you guys are going to be so thoughtful that it's not going to be something that puts somebody in an awkward position. Has that been your experience?
Yeah, that's absolutely been the experience that we've had. You know, once we kind of get our foot in the door and really have a chance to talk to the vets and explain what the program is, it's a grant program. You know, they're not going to get a bill. We don't take out a second mortgage on their home to do the home repair services. It's strictly a needs-based program. They apply. We do want them to have, a DD-214 discharge paper showing that they're honorably discharged. You know, we generally want them to own their own home, although there are a couple of exceptions to that for, landlords who happen to be veterans and can't maintain their own properties. There's a lot of good feeling, goodwill that comes with doing this work. You know, we really are happy to do it. And once we have a chance to get in there and talk to them and share our stories and talk about other folks we've helped, and, you know, they're really put at ease, and it's easier for them to accept the help. And then when the work gets done, that really gives them sort of an impetus to really take things into their own hands and move the ball forward on, you know, for themselves at that point, because they do get a little bit of hope. They do get a little bit of understanding that people out there do care about them. They see them, they see what they're going through, and they want to help.
I couldn't agree more. I'm sure that there is a ton of gratitude. I can't imagine being in that situation where an appliance doesn't work or a toilet doesn't work, and you don't feel like you deserve or need help. So I really appreciate your ability to go in and make them feel comfortable. And like Kristen said, connect them with other resources. That's such an invaluable resource that we have in our community. And as we've discussed on this show in the past, being a caregiver can have a detrimental impact on your finances. Many caregivers need to reduce their hours or quit work altogether to care for a loved one. I can't imagine how valuable your services are for those who are not only struggling themselves, but are also going through this struggle while taking care of someone else. Can you tell us how your services, if not directly, then indirectly, benefit caregivers?
Oh, yeah, of course. Like I said, a lot of times it's the caregiver or a trusted friend or other advocate reaching out to us for the vet who is in need. And those people really put their lives on hold in a lot of cases to provide the services that are necessary to give these vets who are struggling a quality life. If we're able to come in and take care of something like a big ticket item, like let's say a furnace, which costs several thousand dollars sometimes, you know, think of the money they save not having to do that on their own, where they can put that money towards putting food on the table, paying for medication, medical supplies, you know, getting to and from appointments if they have transportation issues. There's a lot of sort of knock-on effects that happen when we are able to go in and provide a service for someone like I said, you know, any kind of plumbing repairs, appliances, mechanical systems, electrical upgrades.
You do it all.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much.
That's wonderful. Would you, like whether you're working on that house for a caregiver or completing a project for a veteran, would you be able to share one of your most memorable home improvement stories or somebody who kind of struck you?
Sure. Yeah, I guess, you know, we work for a vet who was dealing with a cancer diagnosis. And it was just like what you said, you know, the wife was the caregiver, the primary caregiver. She had to give up her career to provide services. You know, adult children had to move back home to help out with the family finances. So these sorts of things affect not just the vet and the spouse. It's really the whole family. So we were able to come in and provide not only services through our Serving Those Who Serve program in terms of doing things like, you know, putting new gutters on the home so they don't get flooded basements, and, you know, repairing leaks in the roof, putting a new furnace in, insulating the home properly so it's comfortable and safe in the wintertime. You know, we were able to come in and do all that. And although, you know, the vet ended up passing away during the project, you know, you could see how grateful he was, what you know, a quality experience it was at the end of the life there. And especially the carry on, you know, how positive effect that was on the rest of his family who were left there as well.
I can only imagine.
Most
because
definitely.
He would know, right, that in his passing, a lot of the major concerns are taken care of, and then they're not going to fall now on the wife that has her hand, her plate full already and grieving. So that is just amazing work that you do, and I want to make sure that we get the word out on where people can go to find you and how they can support you.
Sure. I would say the best place to go is to start with our website, which is www.projecthomewi.org. And from there, you can access links to all of our programs, including Serving Those Who Served. And we accept donations directly through our website, you know, using a card-based system. Or if you want to send in a check for a donation, there is an address there. And if you want to put on the memo line, STWS for Serving Those Who Served, that will get directed to that program, and that's the only thing we'll use that for. So that would be one way to give. And then obviously just supporting our organization, getting the word out to other people that their service is available and that we're out there and we want to help. We're willing to help. We have funding. You know, these services are out there.
So give them a call.
Adam,
go ahead.
Adam, is there any way that people can do any of the work themselves, like if they don't have a lot of cash to donate? Are you looking for volunteers to ever work on these projects?
We generally don't do volunteer work for a lot of these, again, for confidentiality reasons, and also just because we want to keep the work in, you know, professionally done, and people with licenses and certifications if it's required. So bringing in volunteers is sometimes challenging. In certain instances, we can do that. A lot of times it's, you know, former coworkers of the vet want to come out and help out, or other companies that are focused on assisting veterans. We can put together a program specific to that, but we generally don't do volunteer programs with the general public. So monetary donations are generally the best thing to do there if they want to give to that program. And I think that, you know, in general, just, you know, getting out there, getting the word out and telling people that these programs are out there. If you know a vet who needs help and they're, you know, don't want to ask themselves, feel free to reach out to us. We've got an outreach staff that can go, you know, make a phone call, talk to them. If we want us to go knock on a door and say hi, just introduce ourselves, we could do that too.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Do you guys have any annual events or upcoming events that we can share? Or is it just all donation-based through the website?
for this program, it's primarily donation-based through the website. Yep.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for the work that you do and coming on in this evening, nighttime, to share with listeners. So I would encourage everybody to go to Project Home and check it out. And if you're able to make a donation, it goes to really support veterans, people with disabilities, lower income, and not only them, but the whole entire family that's involved. So thank you so much, Adam.
Thank you.
Thanks, Adam.
You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and today we have been sharing stories of veterans resources throughout the state of Wisconsin, and I can't wait for the next one because it involves four legs and a tail. I'm always my favorite, right, Kristen? I always try to incorporate dogs whenever I can or however I can. So our last Our last guest for the evening is Lonnie Rethaber. Okay, did I do it? Rethaber. Gosh, I knew it. I told you, the harder I try, the worse I mess it up. And Lonnie is with Patriot Canines of Wisconsin out of Wausau, Wisconsin. You can hear us in Wausau on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 FM and 12:30 AM. It is Patriot Canines of Wisconsin's mission to, at no cost to qualified veterans, educate, train psychiatric service dog teams to have a fulfilling and meaningful life in the community of their choice. It is their goal to help veterans win the war against suicide, depression, and anxiety by empowering them with the use of a service dog. I love how you refer to the veteran and their service dog as a dog team, because that's exactly what they are, right? They join together to achieve this common goal.
Exactly.
Lonnie, not only do you train dogs from the early puppy days to become service dogs, you also offer a lot of other programs, such as Paws for Patriots, veteran-owned puppy classes, and service dog boot camps. Wow. I mean, there's just so much going on there. So do you mind taking a few minutes here and telling us more about all of the great work you're doing in these specific areas, please?
Yes, Kristen, I can. First off, I want to say thank you to Larry and Adam for what they do, because it's other nonprofits like that that help keep veterans helping veterans. And there's a lot of needs out there that are unmet by government agencies. And I just want to say thank you to them both. Patriot Canines has a lot of programs within programs. Paws for Patriots program derived from our need for puppy raisers. We do purchase and adopt puppies and train them for up to 2 years. That first year, we raised them with puppy raisers. We started during COVID in those time frames. We started having a hard time getting fosters, or we call them puppy raisers. Most people refer to them as fosters. And our fosters don't just get to play with a puppy. We do have certain protocols and things like that, because our dogs are going to be a working dog for the rest of their life and have a specific job to do. So we have certain ways we like to raise them. And a lot of people start to find out about that and they decide, yeah, this isn't for me, because this looks like a lot of hard work. And it is hard work. We partnered with the Wisconsin Department of Corrections and Rengratt State Correctional Institute to use persons within our care, that's the proper term for it, or the inmates, to help raise our puppies for that first year. They're essentially doing the puppy raiser program for us. We train down there every Friday with them. So 12 hours from now, I'll be in prison training puppies. I always call my family when I get out of there and say, "Oh, I'm out of prison." But they've been really, really good for us. The staff, the warden, the persons within our care, all have been excellent, excellent dog trainers for us, and helping support that program. We've currently have 10 dogs in the prison system with 24 inmates in that program. So it's more than just one person training a dog. It's a group of guys training the dogs for us.
Gosh,
and they're doing really good. the first five dogs that we're pulling that are graduating on the November 4th is our first graduation there. So the first five dogs and their veteran candidates will be there at that graduation to pick up their dogs. We've already placed several of those dogs with veterans at the prison. So it's been a very rewarding.
Wonderful.
It sounds like a real win-win. What about some of the other classes and boot camps that you have to offer?
So we do still have our puppy programs here at Patriot Canines in Wausau, where we have our fosters raising the puppies for us, and they come here weekly for training. We also allow veterans that already purchased the dog that if it matches our protocols and our temperament tests, that we allow them to train that puppy for that first year. All dogs to get into our service dog program have to be able to pass the AKC CGC test and be 1 year of age. So all those puppies have to be raised for that first year. Our boot camp is for the veterans that receive some of the dogs coming out of our puppy raiser program, because most of those dogs are kind of trained in obedience already. But the veteran doesn't know how to handle them. So we send them through a 6-week boot camp to learn how to handle a dog, husbandry, how to do first aid, all that, those types of things like that. And then we have our aftercare program as well. We take care of our veterans long term. So after they graduate, they still are part of our family. We have aftercare programs. We just had P-Canines Week at Camp American Legion. We had two bands for concerts there. We had extra classes, and we just got a good bonding experience with all of our graduates and current students that came to that, spent the week there.
I love how the veterans are really incorporated into this. It just reminds me of a story that we have this dog that is a very naughty dog. We'll leave it at that. And I sent him away. He was sent away to a trainer, and they stay with the trainer for several weeks, and she brought the dog back, and it was a transformed dog, right? Amazing, showing me all these tricks it could do. The lady left, and the dog went right back to its nightmarish ways, because as it turned out, the dog has me trained, right? So I love your commitment that you make to not only the dog, but to the veteran, you know, and again, going back to realizing that this is a dog team.
That's correct. We use the community model of training the dog. So that experience that you had with a trainer happens across the service dog industry. There's professionals training the dogs. They're given to their people, and the dog falls apart quickly. We use a community model. Yes, some of our dogs are pre-trained in that first year, but only obedience. All the service dog training is done in that second 30-week program. We train the veteran and the dog together. The veteran's actually part of that training, so they're understanding what is going into that training, so the maintenance on that dog is kept long-term. And that's one thing about service dogs is people think, well, once it's trained, it's trained. That's not necessarily true. Dogs that know all these types of jobs, police dogs, service dogs, search and rescue dogs, they have to constantly train to be able to do that job. And that's what we teach our veterans, how to maintain that. We also have a recertification program where the veterans come back and recert their dogs here 6 months, 1 year, and every year of the service life of that dog.
So Lonnie, we are going to be running out of time, which is so unfortunate because there's so much more that we can talk about, and I hope that we can have you back to pick up this conversation. But can you let people know where they can go to support your organization?
All the social medias, patriotcanines.org is our website. There's links on there to get you to everything else. But we're on all the social medias. We even have a TikTok page.
Oh, nice.
Excellent. Thanks, Lonnie, so much.
Yeah.
Thank you to everyone for having our guests for the amazing work you do. Everybody else, we'll see you next week. This has been a wonderful opportunity to talk with some fabulous folks.
Wonderful. Thank you.